center. Mary carried the light. This must be Christmas, must be tonight. Must be tonight. Must be tonight. Must be tonight. Come and praise Him for now and evermore, Jesus Christ, the
That's Pittsburgh Rock and Roll for you by request. That's Donnie Iris and the Cruisers from his Christmas album, Alleluia. Came out about 10 years ago, and that was This Child. One of my favorite Christmas tunes. Boy, I love the energy of that song. Love Donnie Iris. How can you live in Pittsburgh and not love Donnie Iris? We all need more Donnie Iris. We all need more Christmas Donnie Iris, right? Before that, Queen from a 12-inch single, Thank God It's Christmas. And we started that set of music with Richie Furey from Poco with Christmas Must Be Tonight. So where are you guys in the stress of Christmas, right? You know, like that that great Shrek movie where the donkey says, it's just not Christmas till someone cries. Are you crying about all the things you got to get to and it's around the corner? Where are you in your Christmas shopping? Well, I'll tell you what, I've got some shopping to go, but I'm in pretty good shape. I Christmas shop throughout the year because I just love it so much. But I got a little bit to go before Christmas arrives. And I'll tell you what, tomorrow night I'll be shopping. And while I'm shopping, I'll be having the radio on in the car at 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh, listening to the Mockster talking about Viva La Mock. Remember that kid you protected in high school, the kid everyone was picking on? Well, 22 years he spent here at WRCT, and you don't go that long on the air without putting on one terrific radio show. Don't tell him that, his head gets all big, but it is a good show, and that's one of the reasons I'm always listening to it. Friday nights at 9 p.m., we're talking the best and worst in indie, punk, classic country, power pop. And if I know the Mockster, he's going to be sprinkling in some Christmas music tomorrow night. That's Viva La Mock, Friday night starting at 9, exclusively here on 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh. So let's do it. It wouldn't be a Christmas show without maybe my favorite Christmas tune, new release of the year. This is a radio remix from the big guy talking about Thor. This is Donner and Blitzen. Give it a listen.
Reindeer alive, get out and cry. Christmas and a happy new year. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy new year.
Hello, everybody, and Merry Christmas. It's Joe Brocato, and I'm so happy to be on Courts in Session on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Remember this, it may not be politically correct, but I don't care. We still say Merry Christmas around here. Merry Christmas, Pittsburgh.
People look for Christmas under a tree. All those presents and things, they don't satisfy me like you do. The perfect Christmas is Christmas with you. It may be cold outside, but that doesn't bother me. I've got you by my side. That's all the heat that I need. Ooh, the perfect Christmas is Christmas with you. Oh, yeah, yeah. Christmas with you. Mm-hmm. Christmas with you. It may be cold outside, but that doesn't bother me. I've got you by my side. That's all the heat that I need. Ooh, the perfect Christmas is Christmas with you. Christmas with you.
If I get home on Christmas Day, I won't need soft words to say I miss you and I can stay a while. You'll see it in my eyes and when I smile. If I get home before while you're still sleeping tight, I'll take you in my arms and there you'll stay. If I get home on Christmas Day, writing letters every day never really seemed to say where I feel deep in this heart of mine. This time, if I get home on Christmas Day, I won't need soft words to say I miss you and I will stay a while. You'll see it in my eyes and when I smile. If I stay, if I get home on Christmas Day, I'll take you in my arms and there you'll stay. If I get home on Christmas Day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is my favorite Christmas song of all time. Talking about the King of Rock and Roll from the early 70s, that's Elvis Presley with I'll Be Home on Christmas Day. And I can play that song on repeat, drive my family crazy at home. Send that out to my beautiful wife, Camille. She's what I want under my Christmas tree Christmas morning. I'm your rockin' attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. You've been listening to the annual Christmas Special 2021, nearing the end. But we're going to close tonight with our tradition of playing the Charlie Daniels Band, A Carolina Christmas Carol. If you've never heard this, you don't want to miss it. It's something special, and it's extra precious to me this year, in light of the fact that we lost Charlie earlier in March. I've loved this Christmas carol for a long time, and apparently so have a lot of you. So we're going to close it out tonight. Sit back, turn up the radio. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. If you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it again coming at you out of the West Coast at 1033WWRO.com. And for those of you who need a little Christmas music beyond the Christmas holiday, well, this show will be replayed Monday from 12 to 2:30 right here on WRCT. So I want to remind you to take care of each other, be kind to each other, and be proud to be American. Merry Christmas, Pittsburgh. Good night.
Well, I might as well go ahead and tell you right up front, I believe in Santa Claus. Now, you can believe or not believe, but I'm here to tell you for a fact that there is a Santa Claus, and he does bring toys and stuff like that on Christmas Eve night. I know, it sounds like I've had too much eggnog, don't it? All I ask is that you wait till I get through telling my story before you make up your mind. When I was a kid, Christmas time had a magic to it that no other season of the year had. There was just something in the air, something you couldn't put your finger on, but it was there, and it affected everybody. It seemed like everybody smiled and laughed more at that time of the year, even the people who didn't hardly smile and laugh the rest of the year. You reckon it's going to snow? I sure do wish it'd snow this year. You reckon it's going to snow? Heck no, it's not going to snow. As far as I know, it ain't never snowed in Wilmington, North Carolina at Christmas time in the whole history of man. It seemed like everybody in the world had snow at Christmas time except us. In the funny papers, Nancy and Sluggo and Little Orphan Annie had snow to frolic around in at Christmas time. The Christmas cards had snow. Bing Crosby even had snow to sing about, but not one flake fell on Wilmington, North Carolina. But that didn't dampen our spirits one little bit. Our family celebrated Christmas to the hilt. We were a big, close-knit family, and we'd gather up at Grandma's house every year. My grandparents lived on a farm in Bladen County, about 50 miles from Wilmington, and I just couldn't wait to get up there. They lived in a great big old farmhouse, and every Christmas they'd fill it up with their children and grandchildren. We'd always stay from the night of the 23rd through the morning of the 26th. They'd be Uncle Clyde and Aunt Martha and Uncle Lacey and Aunt Selma and Uncle Leroy and Aunt Molly and Uncle Stuart and Aunt Opal and my mama and daddy, Ernest and Nadine. I won't go into how many children was there, but take my word for it, there was a bunch. There'd be people sleeping all over that big old house. We kids would sleep on pallets on the floor, and we'd giggle and play till some of the grown-ups would come up and make us be quiet. All the usual ground rules about eating were off those days at Grandma's house. You could eat as much pie and cake and candy as you could hold, and your mama wouldn't say a word to you. My grandma'd cook from sunup to sundown and love every minute of it. She had cakes and pies and candy and fruit and nuts just sitting out all the time, and on top of that, she'd cook three big meals a day. I mean, we eat like pigs. Christmas is also the only time that my granddaddy'd take a drink. It was a southern custom of the time not to drink in front of small children, so granddaddy kept his drinking whiskey hid in the barn. When he'd want to go out there and get him a snort, he'd say he had to go see if the mare had had her foal yet. It was a good, good time. A little old-fashioned by some people's standards, but it suited us just fine. If I'm not mistaken, it was a year I was 5 years old that my cousin Buford told me that there wasn't any Santa Claus, and Buford was about 9 at the time. He always was a mean-natured cuss. He still is. Well, I just refused to believe him. I said, "You're telling a great big fib, Buford Ray, because Santa Claus comes to see me every Christmas right here at Grandma and Granddaddy's house." "That ain't Santa Claus. That's your mom and daddy." Well, one thing led to another, and I got so upset about the prospect of no Santa Claus that I went running into the house crying. "Grandma, Grandma, Buford says there ain't no Santa Claus. There is a Santa Claus, ain't there, Grandma?" "Of course he is, Curtis. Buford is just joking with you." Aunt Selma heard me talking to Grandma and walked to the door. "Buford Ray, get yourself in this house right this minute." When he came in, Aunt Selma grabbed him by the ear and led him in the front room and swatted his rear end. Granddaddy was also a big defender of Santa Claus. He'd talk about Santa Claus like he was a personal friend of his. And the more he went to check on the mare, the more he talked about Santa Claus, or Sandy Claus, as he called him. "Yeah, children, old Sandy Claus will be hooking up them reindeer and heading on down this way before long. Wonder what he's going to bring this year." He'd have us so excited by the time we went to bed that I reckon if visions of sugar plums ever danced in anybody's heads, it was ours. Christmas Eve night, after we'd eat about as much supper as we could hold, we'd go in the front room. There was always a big log fire crackling in the fireplace, and Granddad'd always say the same thing. Children, do y'all know why we have Christmas every year? Because that's when the baby Jesus was born. That's right, we're celebrating the Lord's birthday. Do y'all know where he was born at? In Bethlehem, we'd all chime in. That's right, he was born in a stable in Bethlehem almost 2,000 years ago. Then Granddaddy'd put on his spectacles and read St. Luke's version of the Christmas story. Then after we'd had family prayer, Granddaddy'd always get a twinkle in his eye. I reckon I better step out in the barn and see if that old mare had her baby yet. There was always a chorus of, can I go with you, Granddaddy? Y'all better stay in here by the fire. It's mighty cold outside. I'll be right back. When Granddaddy came back in the house, he'd always say, I was on my way back from the barn a while ago, and I heard something sound like bells tinkling way back off yonder in the woods. I just can't figure out why bells would be ringing back in the woods this time of the night. It's Santa Claus. It's Santa Claus. Well, I never thought about that. I wonder if it was old Sandy Claus. You children better get to bed. You know, he won't come to see you as long as you're awake. Then it was time to say goodnight. All the grandchildren would go around hugging all the grown-ups. Good night, Grandma. Good night, Granddaddy. Good night, Uncle Clyde. Good night, Aunt Molly, and so forth. We'd always try to stay awake, lying on the pallets until Santa Claus got there, but we always lost the battle. It sounded like the Third World War at Grandma's house on Christmas morning. There was cap pistols going off and baby dolls crying and all the children hollering at the top of their lungs. By the time the next school year started, I was 6 years old in the first grade, and I kept thinking about what Buford had said. I didn't want to believe it, but it kept slipping into the back door of my mind. At school, Buford was 3 grades ahead of me, but I'd still see him sometimes, and every time he'd see me that whole year, he'd make it a point to rub it in about Santa Claus. He'd do something like get me around a bunch of his older buddies and say, hey, you fellas, Curtis still believes in Santa Claus, and they'd all laugh and point. Away from adult persuasion, I guess Buford finally wore me out. I returned to Grandma's house the next year, not believing that there was a Santa Claus. Christmas lost a little of its mystique. Oh, I still enjoyed it. I even pretended that I believed in Sandy Claus for Granddaddy's benefit, but it wasn't the same. Well, as you know, time marches on. Children grow up and leave home, including me. I was living in Denver, Colorado, married with a child, and I hadn't been home for Christmas since our little daughter had been born. Dawn was 3 that year, and this would be the first time she would ever really know about Santa Claus, and she was some kind of excited. We had the best time shopping for her, buying all the little toys she wanted. Daddy called me about 3 weeks before Christmas and said, son, you know your grandparents are getting old. They requested that all the children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren come home the way we used to. Can you make it, son? We'll be there, Daddy. I couldn't think of a better place in the whole world for little Dawn to spend her first real Christmas, so we packed up and headed for North Carolina. Grandma was 82 years old, but she still cooked all day long, and she still enjoyed every minute of it. Granddaddy was 84, but he still had a twinkle in his eye and a mare in the barn. The old house was fuller than ever, with a whole new generation of children in it. Even Buford had married, but he didn't have any children. He didn't want any. One of my cousins said he figured Buford was too stingy to have children. Buford was still the same, except that he'd changed from a boy with a mean nature to a full-grown man with a cynical nature and a know-it-all attitude. Just before we went into the front room for family prayer and the reading of the Christmas story, I overheard him say to somebody, I don't know why Granddaddy keeps filling them children's heads full of Santa Claus nonsense. I think it's ridiculous. If I had children, I wouldn't even let him tell them all that junk. I looked hard at Buford. I never had liked him, and I liked him even less now. Our little daughter was so excited when Granddaddy started talking about Sandy Claus that she jumped up and down and clapped her hands. When I took her up to bed, there was pure excitement in those big brown eyes. Santa Claus is coming, Daddy. Santa Claus is coming, Daddy. I got a warm feeling all over, and I sure was glad to be back at Grandma's house at Christmas time. After all the children had gone to sleep, the grown-ups started going out to their cars to get the toys they'd brought for Santa Claus to leave under the Christmas tree. I decided to wait until everybody else had finished before I put out Dawn's presents. This was a special time, and I wanted to enjoy it. After everybody had gone up to bed, I went out to the car to get Dawn's toys, and to my shock, I couldn't find them. I ran back in the house to my wife, Sylvia. Where'd you pack Dawn's Christmas presents? I thought you packed them. I was close to panic, but I didn't want Sylvia to know it, so I said, oh, well, you're just going back to bed, honey, and I'll look again. I probably just overlooked them. I kissed my wife goodnight and went back downstairs. I knew I hadn't overlooked them. We'd somehow forgot to pack them, and they were 2,000 miles away in Denver, Colorado. I was a miserable man. I just didn't feel like I could face little Dawn the next morning. She'd be so disappointed. All the other children had the toys that Santa had brought, and my beloved little daughter wouldn't have anything. How could I have been so dumb? Here it was, 12 o'clock, Christmas Eve night, all the stores closed, everybody in bed, and me without a single present for little Dawn. I was heartbroken. I went into the front room and sat by the dying fire, dejected and hopeless. I don't know how long I sat there staring at the embers, but sometime later on I heard a rustle behind me and somebody said, "You got a match, son?" I turned around and almost fell on the floor. Standing not 10 feet from me was a short, fat little man in a red suit with a long white beard and a pipe sticking out of his mouth. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. He looked at me and chuckled, "Have you got a match, son?" I ran out and I wanted to get this pipe going. When I finally got my voice back, all I could say was, "Who are you?" "Well, people call me by different names in different parts of the world, but around here they call me Santa Claus." "No, I mean, who are you really?" "I just told you, son. How about that match?" I stumbled to the mantelpiece and got a kitchen match and gave it to him. "Much obliged, son." He stood there lighting his pipe with me looking at him like he was a ghost or something. "How'd you get in here?" "Oh, I got my ways. I thought you were supposed to slide down the chimney." "That's a common misconception. Would you slide down a chimney with a fire at the bottom?" "Well, no, I mean, no, sir." "Well, neither would I. How'd you get here?" "I got a sturdy sleigh and the finest team of reindeer a man could have."
"But we ain't got no snow."
Santa Claus laughed so hard that his considerable belly shook. "I don't need snow. Half the places I go in the world don't have snow. Besides, I like to get out of the snow once in a while. We have it year-round at the North Pole, you know."
"You mean you really live at the North Pole?"
"Of course, I've always lived at the North Pole. Don't you know anything about Santa Claus, son?"
"Well, yeah, but I thought it was a big put-on for the children."
"That's the trouble with you grown-ups. You think that everything you can't see is a put-on. It's a shame grown people can't be more like children. They don't have any trouble believing in me."
"You mean you really got a sleigh with reindeer named Donner and Blitzen and stuff like that?"
"That's right, son. There's Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen and Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen. Of course, there's no Rudolph with the red nose. I don't know who came up with that one. Rudolph really is a put-on."
"What are you doing here? Why'd you come?"
"Because there's a little girl in this house who believes in me very much. Now, she'd be mighty disappointed to wake up Christmas morning and have nothing under the tree."
"You mean you came all the way here just because one little girl believes in you?"
"That's right, son. There's magic in believing. Besides, she's not the only one in this house who believes in me."
"Who else?"
"Why, your grandfather, of course."
"You mean Granddaddy wasn't putting us on all those years? He really believed in you?"
"Of course he believed in me."
"Well, why do you do this?"
"It's my way of celebrating the most important birthday in the history of man. Our Lord has given us so much. How can we do less?" Santa Claus consulted a piece of paper he pulled out of his pocket and started taking a doll and other toys out of a big bag he brought with him. "Well, I gotta go, son. I got a lot of stops to make before sunup. It's really been nice talking to you. Thanks for the match. Can I help you with your bag, Santa Claus?" "No, that's all right, son. I'm used to carrying it."
I walked outside with him. "Where's your sleigh, Santa Claus?"
"It's parked right over there in the edge of the woods. You can come over and see it if you'd like."
I started walking over to his sleigh with him, but then I had a thought.
"I'm going to have to miss seeing your sleigh and reindeer. Thank you so very much. You saved my life. God bless you, Santa Claus. I'll see you next year." "God bless you too, son, and a Merry Christmas to you and yours."
Santa Claus started across the yard toward his sleigh, and I went running back in the house like a wild man. I raced up the stairs.
"Buford, Buford, get up. What's the matter? Is the house on fire?"
"No, but hurry. Come on out on the upstairs porch."
Buford grumbled as he got up and followed me out on the upstairs porch.
"But the heck you won't. It's cold out here.
Just hush up and listen." Well, we listened for a full minute and nothing happened.
"You're crazy. I'm going back to bed."
"Buford, if you go back in the house, you're going to miss something I want you above all people to see." We waited for a little while longer, and I'd almost given up when I heard it. It was just like a little tingle at first, hanging on the frosty air and getting louder by the second. It was sleigh bells. Buford looked at me and said,
"Curtis, is this some kind of joke or something?"
"No, Buford, I swear it ain't. Just wait a minute now." The sound of sleigh bells were getting louder, and Buford's face was getting whiter.
"You got somebody out there doing that, ain't you? Admit it, you got somebody out there, ain't you?"
I didn't didn't say a word. All of a sudden, it sounded like somebody had flushed a covey of quail. That sleigh came up out of the woods and headed west, hovering just above the treetops. Buford was speechless. I thought he was going to pass out. He held onto the banister and took deep breaths. Even if you believe me so far, I know you ain't going to believe this next part, but it really happened. Santa Claus made a big circle and turned and flew around the house. I bet he went over 20 feet from the upstairs porch when he passed by me and Buford. Old Santa Claus could really handle them reindeer. And then he headed west again, moving in a pretty good clip this time. I even hate to tell you this next part, because you'll think I took it right out of a book, but I didn't. Anyway, just about the time he was getting out of our hearing, he hollered, "Merry Christmas, everybody!" And then he was gone. "Curtis, you know where Granddaddy keeps that bottle hid in the barn? I need me a drink." I don't believe Buford ever told anybody about seeing Santa Claus, and I know I didn't, not until now, but I just had to tell somebody about it. It's been hard keeping it to myself all these years. I'm a granddaddy myself now. That little girl that caused all this to happen with her faith in Santa Claus is grown and married and has a 3-year-old girl and a 5-year-old boy. Me and Sylvia moved back to North Carolina many years ago and bought a big old farmhouse. Now my grandchildren come and spend Christmas with me and their grandmother. There's not as many of us as it was at Grandma's house, but we have just as bigger time and we celebrate Christmas just as hard. In fact, Christmas is just about the only time of year I'll take a drink. I always get me a pint of old granddad at Christmas time. Since the grandchildren are so small, I don't like to drink in front of them, so I keep my drinking whiskey hid out in the barn. When I go out there and get me a snort, I always tell the grandchildren I gotta go see if the cow's got corn. Of course, all the grown-ups know why I'm going out to the barn, or at least they think they do. I always make my last trip to the barn after I read the Christmas story and had family prayer. Everybody thinks I'm going out to get me a snort, but they're wrong. I'm just going out to hear the sleigh bells ring.
This program would be impossible without your support. Donate at waywardradio.org. Thank you. You're listening to Away With Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. Listener Justin Masterson shared some slang from his favorite hobby with us, and that includes terms like drain, gobble hole, and live catch. And Grant, I know you know what this slang is from.
Right. I don't need a death say for that. That's pinball language.
It is indeed. A drain can be both a noun, and that's the space between the flippers where you lose the ball, and it can be a verb, and that's the act of losing a ball. And a gobble hole is a hole that swallows up the ball, as you might imagine. And a live catch, I love this one, that's when you hit the flipper so that it hits the ball at the exact right time to cancel the ball's momentum.
Right. And then it just balances on the flipper, and then you can have a moment to think about what you want to do with that ball, where you want to send it, you know, are you going to, if there's a special place to get more points or get a multi-ball going.
There's a satisfaction in that, isn't there? Just balancing it there and deciding where you're going to send it.
Oh, I spent many hours with the Addams Family pinball game. Just so many. Yeah, there was something perfect about that. I don't know if it was just me and my friends, but we loved that game. And I'm talking not as a teenager, but in my 20s and 30s.
Oh, really?
Very good, yeah.
Would thing come out if you got?
I think there was somebody came out. I think it might have been, I don't remember. Somebody came out and spun around, but it was very good.
Well, we'll share some more pinball slang later in the show, and we'd love to hear from you about slang that you use in your hobby or any other question about language. So give us a call, 877-929-9673, or send it to us in email. That address is words@waywardradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Caitlin. I'm calling from Rye, New York. I love the show. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Caitlin. Thank you for the kind words.
Hey, Caitlin, what's on your mind?
Well, I've been wondering about the term salad days. Like, people say, oh, those were your salad days. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, I love salad, but, you know, salad has some baggage. It's like all those smiling ads of women laughing with salad. And, you know, lots of different kinds of salad. I'm just like, what does this mean? Those were your salad days.
Oh, when have people said something to you about your salad days? What was going on?
I think I heard someone, like an older person, say, oh, those were your salad days. And I'm like, oh. What does that mean?
That noise like, says so much to me.
Yes, I was flummoxed.
Did it sound positive?
Yeah, the impression was that it was a positive, like the youthful days of salad, or, you know, like those were the good days. And, you know, I feel like I read once that salad was served only before a meal in California. It started in California because people were so hungry and they only came around so seldom that the only thing they could do was give them some salad while the main meal was being prepared. And that's why salad is eaten beforehand. So I don't know, you know, if it's a positive or what, but that's what I'm wondering.
Oh, this is fabulous. What would you say if I told you that salad days is an allusion to something that Shakespeare said?
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. The first recorded instance that we have of this term salad days is in his play Antony and Cleopatra. And Cleopatra is in love with the Roman general Mark Antony, but she remembers an earlier dalliance that she had with Julius Caesar. She says, "My salad days, when I was green in judgment, cold in blood."
This is hot and cold.
Exactly. She's talking about her youthful, immature days when you know, it's sort of like salad is fresh and green and crisp. And so she's talking about her younger days. And, you know, so it's a positive thing. In fact, over time, people have come to use the term salad days to talk about a wonderful period in their life, even if they're older, my salad days. But it's a very positive term.
And so there's a direct correlation to the green in judgment being green in general. That's the idea of new green, like a new grass growing or newly sprouted seed, right?
Flavorful. Yeah.
Crunchy. Oh, that's so nice.
Crunchy. Back in your crunchy days.
I think it's lunchtime. That's fascinating. I would not have known it was such an old term with a literary...
It is. Yes, we don't know if Shakespeare actually coined the term, if it had been floating around, but his play is the first record we have of anybody saying salad days.
Well, that's fascinating. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for answering that. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Call us again sometime,
Thank you.
Thanks, Caitlin.
Bye.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
She sounds like she's in the middle of her salad days.
She does, doesn't she?
Green with youth. It doesn't sound particularly misspent, though. She's spending a lot of time in the salad aisle at the grocery store.
Yeah, but if you're green in judgment, as Cleopatra was, I guess
it's the idea that you're just not wise yet. You haven't made all the bad decisions that will give you wisdom.
Well, it would be an excellent decision to call us to talk about language. The number is 877-929-9673, or send us your questions in email. The address is words@waywardradio.org. You'll recall our conversation with Lana in Evansville, Indiana, who said that the women in her family all call each other Gert or Gertie affectionately. And then she found out that one of her friends does the same thing. Everybody in their family calls the women Gertie or Gert. And we were all speculating as to why. And we did hear from Annabelle Nielsen in Melbourne, Australia, who said that on her mother's side of the family, they do the same thing. They use Gertie as kind of a generic name or term of endearment. And she wonders if it came from the name of Gertrude Lawrence, who was a famous English actress and performer in the early 20th century. She won a Tony in 1952 opposite Yul Brynner in The King and I. But we also, Grant, can't rule out the Jack Benny radio show.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I've been a fan of the Jack Benny radio show for a long time. But there are these two operators, telephone operators with thick accents, who do these great routines where they mock Jack Benny when he's waiting for them to connect a call. And they're Mabel and Gertrude.
Gertrude.
Mabel, what is it, Gertrude? Guess who's on the line again? Oh, is it Mr. Thinks He's Wonderful? You know, I can't even do the voices. But
that's
good. We'll post a link to them. But these two characters went on for decades on radio and television. And the Jack Benny show was top rated for a very long time in this country. Its influence can't be understated. So yeah. I just wonder if there's not something. However, they never called her Gert or Gertie, as far as I know. It was always Gertrude.
But they did have that relationship. It was always the two of them, right?
Yeah, so two of them kind of like just talking smack about Jack when he was just waiting impatiently for them to connect his call.
Yeah, so I can see female members of a family using Gert or Gertie or Gertrude. Let us know what you think. 877-929-9673 or send your thoughts about any aspect of language to words@waywardradio.org. Hello, you have a way with words.
Good morning. This is Quincy Orhai in Bozeman, Montana.
Hi, Quincy in Bozeman.
Welcome, Quincy. What can we do for you?
This came up the other night, and we were talking about how strange the word burrito is. In America, it almost always means a little packet of some kind of often spicy food wrapped up in a flour tortilla. But, of course, the word comes from the word burro, which is a jackass or a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
So how did we get there? How do we get there from here?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's see. So why do we call the food that? Why do we call it a little burro?
Yeah, burrito.
Burrito, yeah, because that ito suffix is a diminutive, which means that when you tack it on, whatever word you tack it onto, you're indicating that now it's a new word that's indicated as a little smaller or maybe cuter or more adorable.
Right. Yeah. In Spanish, burro obviously means the animal, but as a carpenter, I happen to know that burro is also, at least in Mexico, the word that's used for sawhorses.
Well, there are a couple different theories, stories about why we call the food burrito. And one of the basic ones is that the idea that this big tortilla, this flour tortilla, looks a bit like a blanket. And you fill it full of things just like you would fill the back of a burrito. So it looks kind of like the blanket that you would throw on the back of a burro before you loaded it up and it carted your stuff off for you. Another idea is that the burrito is, once it's full, it's bulging. Sometimes when you put stuff on the back of a burro, you tie it up, you tie the blanket up or you tie the canvas up, and it bulges. And a burrito that's really loaded down with the fillings, the beans and meat or whatever, just bulges in the same way. But there's another story that I found in the Dictionary of Chicano Folklore that talks about burros on the trail with vaqueros, which are the Spanish word for cowboys, are kind of the regular companions of horses. And they bring burros along as pack animals, but they also kind of calm the horses at night, you know, when there are coyotes around and so forth. And vaqueros on the trail would bring burritos because they're easy. They travel easily. You put a little cheese, a little beans, you wrap them up, and they keep all day long. And they were so common, they were kind of like the common companions to the vaqueros in the same way that burros were the common companions to the horses. So they were kind of like little burros to the vaqueros, burritos. And I don't know if that's there's anything to that, but that's one story that they told. Yeah, we find burrito as a similar food dish mentioned in a dictionary of Mexicanisms as far back as 1895 in Guanajuato and in Mexico City itself. And it pops up again and again in the 20s and 30s and 40s here and there, but usually in the northern states of Mexico and in the southwest of the United States. But anyway, there's some other theories that we don't need to share here, but basically those are why we think that they're called burritos.
Wow, that's pretty
lots of
amazing.
Stuff.
So it actually has quite a long history.
Absolutely. I think it's time to go make some chilaquiles.
No, this is making me hungry.
Thank you for your call,
Quincy. Yeah, and good luck on the show.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. More of what we say and why we say it as Away With Words continues.
Support for Away With Words comes from a gift honoring students of the San Diego Community College District. City College, Mesa College, Miramar College, and continuing education prepare them for jobs, personal goals, and transfer to universities. sdccd.edu.
Away With Words is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. BetterHelp.com/words. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even before the pandemic, life was stressful enough. And now with life's other new worries, it can be hard to figure out what's getting in the way of your happiness. BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with a licensed professional therapist. You connect with them safely, privately, and conveniently. It's not a crisis line and it's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely through weekly video or phone sessions. Whether you need a licensed counselor to help with depression, stress, anxiety, sleep, relationships, grief, or something else, everything you share is confidential. As an Away With Words listener, you'll get 10% off your first month. Just go to betterhelp.com/words. Join more than a million people who are taking charge of their mental health. Read their testimonials at betterhelp.com/words.
Thanks to Away With Words sponsor, BetterHelp, betterhelp.com/words. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. You're listening to Away With Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. And joining us now is that international man of many mysteries, John Chinesky.
Hello, baby. How are you? Hi, Martha. Hi, Grant. How are you guys
doing?
Hi,
darling.
Yes.
You have a quiz for us?
I do. You know, this week it's one of our staples. The Takeoff. Now, it's a variation on a National Puzzlers League puzzle type, but it's very simple. You take a word, take its first letter off, hence the takeoff, and a new word is left behind. Now, I'll read a sentence that contains clues to both the original word and the resulting word, and you tell me both of them. This week, we're taking off the letter H from the beginning of all these words. If you have a pencil nearby, maybe this could help you, okay? For example, I crept down the passage from room to room, and the entire house was empty. Now, the word passage clues the word beginning
hall.
With H, hall, right? And the word entire clues the word
all.
All, right. That's all there is to it. I mean, that's all there is. Well, that's all there is to it. Yeah, here we go. Put a flame under that chicken and get ready for lunch.
Put a flame under that chicken and get ready for lunch.
Right.
It's not fire and ire. It's
no,
not...
remember, all these
How
will
about...
begin with H. Yeah.
Oh, H, okay.
Heat and eat.
Heat and eat, yes. Now you've got it. Just keep following the row of shrubs around the boundary of the property.
The hedge and the edge.
Hedge and the edge, yes. Nicely done. From where the ship was anchored, we could see the house and the green shelter of shrubs and vines beside it.
Aw. The harbor and arbor.
Yes, very nice. Good. From bottom to top, the doorway is a little more than 7 feet.
Tricky. Yes. Height height and eight.
Yes.
Very good.
From bottom to top is height, and a little more than seven is eight. Remember in Back to the Future 2 when Marty and his levitating transporter made those guys crash into manure? That was a little too much.
It was his skateboard, hoverboard.
Right.
Hoverboard and overboard.
Yeah, they went a little overboard with the manure on that one, right. Hoverboard and overboard. Nice. Finally, often as I sit in front of the fire, I feel like the luckiest man on the planet.
These are tricky because they're pronounced differently.
Yes, they are.
So in this case, it's sitting by the hearth, and
yes,
you're the luckiest man on earth.
Yes, terrific. Nicely done. You guys did really good on that Takeoffs quiz. Takeoffs H is done.
Well, thank you, John. Great talking with you. And we'd love to talk with you about any aspect of language whatsoever. So call us 877-929-9673 or send us an email. That address is words@waywardradio.org. Hi there. You have a way with words.
Hello, this is Ego from Northbrook, Illinois.
Hi, Ego. Welcome.
What can we do for you?
Having been born in Amsterdam and then moved to Japan and then coming to the States, I've always been curious about language. And about 30 years ago, when I first came to the U.S. for undergrad, I realized whenever people would ask me, how are you? And I start to explain how my life has been or how that weekend has been, people would start to just lose interest and walk away. I have heard from other people from different countries similar experiences. And this is probably something natural of how a language evolves. And my question is, well, at some point at the beginning, was it actually meant to ask how people are doing? As a proof of that, has there been something in any literature, old English, where a conversation is described and the person who answers that actually answers more than just, I am doing well or I'm doing fine?
Ego, I'm curious what your experience was with greetings before you came to the U.S.
Well, I don't remember my days in Holland anymore. I was 9 when I left. And in Japan, there is not an equivalent, so to speak, for how are you expecting the answer to be just a short answer.
Yeah, there's not the polite conversation.
Well, just a greeting would be, yes, of course, there would be a greeting, right? Konnichiwa or ohayou gozaimasu.
Right.
But it's not asking how you are doing.
But you have got to think a little further beyond that. If you say konnichiwa and you mean good day, do they mean to tell you that it is a good day? Are they wishing you a good day? I mean, it still is the same kind of speech. And we have a name for that, for the how are you and the konnichiwa. They're all phatic speech, phatic. Well, one of the best definitions I've seen calls it speech used as a social cement that relies heavily on stereotyped language, but it's not necessarily empty speech or hollow words. This kind of speech communicates ideas or feelings rather than direct information, so it's got some use. And so we don't need to look to the historical record to say, well, did they originally once mean it? Did they, when they say, how are you, did people used to actually reply with information? Because it doesn't matter. Most languages have some kind of phatic speech to one degree or another, both of some have more and some have less. It has to do with about how they treat politeness and honorifics and respect in their language and in their culture. So there's so much happening with language like that. When you go to the grocery store and you have a conversation with the clerk, how are you can say that you're sociable. And if you reply back, I'm fine, thank you, it communicates that you are sociable too. And this is important information between two human animals.
That is so interesting because when somebody says, well, I'm doing fine, answers it in that way, I actually feel the opposite, that, oh, it's that person is just going through the motion mm-hmm. rather than being interested in a conversation.
And they may be just going through the motions, but the important thing here is you have given them an out. So what's happened here right. is you have allowed them not to answer the question because they didn't want to. And society, you've participated in a societal agreement where you have done the conventional thing of asking them how they are, and they've done the conventional thing of replying, I'm fine, and you didn't demand a real explanation of them, which might make them uncomfortable or might make an awkward situation or might make them have to tell more than they want to. And this is important that you give somebody, you make somebody comfortable. You gave them an opportunity to be comfortable, and they took it.
Ah, interesting. Well, I keep a list of things that make me realize when I notice I have been Americanized. And one of them is when I just say, answer, I am doing fine or I'm good.
That sounds like an interesting list, Ago. You'll have to call us back with more of those.
Yeah, it does sound like a really good list. I want to point out that there's an English linguist named Walter Redfern. He's the guy whose definition of phatic speech I kind of quoted earlier. And he also talks about on those occasions when we don't have this kind of this social cement, the social conversational cement, we miss it. When we don't have it, we feel uncomfortable and we're not quite sure why. And there are occasions where we expect it. And it can feel wrong or appropriate not to use it, like funerals or times of crisis or disaster, or when we're writing letters of protest or letters of reference. So these are occasions where the formulaic conventional speech is sometimes more appropriate than saying the original thing or the really trying to break free from the almost cliche of the situation. Well, I got to say, this is it's good to talk to you, Ago, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And we'd love to hear from you again about your experience as a multilingual person in the U.S. and Japan and wherever. Call us again sometime, all right?
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Martha, you can sum it all up by saying that phatic speech is what Anatole Breuer called friendly noise.
Friendly noise. I love that. Friendly noise. Well, if you've got a question about words in language or phatic expressions, give us a call, 877-929-9673, or we'd love to read about your experiences in email. The address is words@waywardradio.org. We heard from Frances Della Penna, who lives in Bluffton, South Carolina, and she said that her mama's expression for when supper is assorted leftovers is cream of Frigidaire. It sounds so fancy, cream
sure
of Frigidaire.
Cream de la Frigidaire.
Yeah, right. Thank you for that, Frances. 877-929-9673.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Diane Houston Floyd. I'm calling from Dallas, Texas.
Diane, what can we do for you today?
Well, I was calling because I was interested in understanding where the word gumshoe came from. I was watching a rerun of a television show, and one character turned to another character in the show and said, "Great, you've hired yourself a gumshoe."
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's an old-fashioned word.
Uh-huh. Was this some kind of mystery or detective story?
Yes. The characters were thrown back in time to this kind of film scene where